From within the shadow of the Golden Circle Cannery, you're listening to The Blather with Dave Riley.
Hello everyone. Today we've got Paul Benedict as one of the people who attended the brigade that went to Venezuela recently. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's good to be here.
Okay, well, what I'm interested in today is trying to get your impressions of Venezuela and to talk about the book, well, the book pamphlet that's just been published. We'll get to the details of that a little bit later. But did you have any particular preconceived ideas of Venezuela before you went there? I suppose there had to be something, because that's why you went there.
Well,
what were you expecting?
Sure. I mean, we had read in Green Left Weekly and heard reports out of Venezuela that indicated that there were big social changes going on. And so we went there. This was the first ever Solidarity Brigade from Australia to Venezuela. So we went there hoping to see the new social missions, see a society in transition. But I guess as the indicated in my diaries, and I think anyone you speak to who went, what you read about and can only prepare you, you know, to the smallest degree from what you actually see there in terms of the quite amazing changes that are happening on a daily basis that we were able to witness and to experience from Caracas through to, you know, wide corners of the country.
Yeah, okay. Well, you talk about the brigade. How many were in the brigade and what was the excuse for it?
There were 58 people who went. It was a pretty phenomenal response when the brigade, I think, was first envisaged. It was going to be a lot smaller than that, but the response showed that there was enormous interest, particularly amongst young people, but from all sorts of walks of life and all sorts of backgrounds, to seeing the changes in Venezuela. And I mean, the excuse was that we're seeing a world and a society in Australia with a hell of a lot of social problems and crises, and workers' rights being taken away, wars being waged, poor people suffering more and more. And over in Venezuela, we're starting to hear and see enormous changes in the opposite direction. And I think the people who went on the brigade wanted to see that firsthand and see if alternatives are possible and what that means in Venezuela and what we could learn from it.
Well, actually, I was had a chance to read your book today, but I thought I'd just read out one paragraph, which
sure.
is the introduction, because you were, let's just say, you're rather keen about your trip.
Oh, I was very excited. I should say the diaries were written basically as I was there every day, or virtually every day, just writing back. So it was sort of very much in the heat of the moment.
And these diaries as such went out in the form of the blog, because I was reading them as a blog post, which I had connection to one of my pages. But anyway, I just want to read this section here, because you know, taste for what's to come in the readings. When everyone out there buys the book concern. But what we saw over the heady days of a Solidarity Brigade easily surpassed anything that could be conveyed in words. A living people's revolution. A society racing in the opposite direction to the majority of the world, away from the destructive capitalist system that exploits and brutalizes the many for the interests of the rich few. And today, toward a new system where the basic needs of the people for health, education, housing, justice, work, dignity determine the society they are creating. Now, did you actually... What did you see over there that substantiates an assessment like that?
Well, I suppose it's... Well, I can start and you can stop me, because
okay.
I will...
Okay.
Because you will probably have to. But, I mean, it was really from the moment we got there, it was clear that this was a very different sort of society. On the one hand, a very poor society, ravages of IMF plans and, you know, the usual treatment of Latin American countries where a tiny few had been enriched on Venezuela's oil while the majority lived in poverty. But that there were dramatic changes taking place that were involving the people. The first day we were there, which wasn't even, the brigade hadn't officially started, I spent the day getting around with my brother, sort of more or less sightseeing, but we ended up a very political day. We ran into a whole range of people who were involved in various social missions. We walked past, we were just walking down the street, there was a new mission that had been set up that was painting murals of Che Guevara and so forth on a building. They were for, it was an organization, Sin Techos, for those without roofs, for the homeless, and basically they'd been given this building by the government, and it was a hive of activity. They were organizing, find hundreds or thousands of people shelter and homes, and that was just one of the, that was just a small example of things that had were sprouting up, which on seemingly a daily basis. We saw protests that were pro-government protests, supportive of Chavez, supportive of the revolution, but trying to push things further, and this is very much the sentiment or the actuality of what we saw, is that the people were playing a very combative role in the new society. They were on the streets, at the gates of parliament, trying to push forward, in this case, Mission Sucre, one of the education missions, which was about getting more people into universities, people to get their high school diplomas, and they were arguing for more resources and a different style of teaching for the teachers, a style that's, and they had placards such as, we cannot base our methods on the methods of foreigners, we cannot incorporate the old ways. So they were talking about a new form of education. So they've already got free education, they've already won free education now in Venezuela, but they're not stopping at that. They're trying to go further. Free education is not enough. Now they're trying to create a very different type of education that's much more about the needs of a new society rather than just into a corporate society.
But you say that people have to push things further. What does that mean? I mean, other people in power in Venezuela, or why must they have to be so actively and so keen to push things further? Where's the opposition coming from? Has a revolution occurred in Venezuela, or is it something else, or is it, you know, something coming into being, or a process, or how would you characterize it?
Yeah, I'd carry it very, very much as a process. I think a revolution is occurring in Venezuela. It's certainly not over. If anything, it's still in many ways in its early days, but it's also incredibly developed, an incredible amount of changes in recent times. We've seen a revolution that has now much more clearly articulated itself as a socialist revolution, but there is an enormous way to go. There is opposition. The opposition comes primarily from internationally, from the US, we've seen, from the likes of Pat Robertson articulating those who want to crush this new social experiment. But of course it has its manifestations in Venezuela itself, in those who were profiting in the old system, those who did do quite well out of a situation where an elite controlled the oil. So there's obviously that opposition there, but you know, people are not, at the same time, a revolution doesn't happen in the click of your fingers. So there's a process which is both being led by Hugo Chavez, president, who is constantly trying to involve the masses and in essence saying on his television program Alo Presidente, which we saw quite often, that basically the people have to come into power. The people do have to take power. And so, yes, we've seen, for example, factories that are now workers run. But not every factory is workers run. There's still plenty of factories that are controlled by capitalists, run as capitalist interests and so forth. So it is a society in transition. But I guess the momentum is very much for more and more people's control, for more and more people's power, and that's what we're seeing every day. People are learning and coming into action, but it's certainly not a done deal, and that's, I guess, the transitional nature of it.
But this business of who controls the factories, who decides that? I mean, let's say factory A down one end of the street is controlled by the workers, as you say, okay, mm-hmm. and then the factory B at the other is still controlled by the old bosses. What changes things around? I mean, is it like the Castro Revolution, that we all nationalise them down to the nails in their boot straps or whatever. What's happening here? How's it done? Is it a proclamation come out of the Presidente or what?
Well, it's very much, I mean, it's quite interesting to look at, I suppose, to look at Cuba, and I think you'd find that Castro and others in the Cuban Revolution would be very clear, they were very clear, that in many cases, forced into nationalizations, often and they would say earlier than they would have liked. The process that's happening in Venezuela is at once very rapid, but it's also, I think, a very astute revolutionary process that's going on. So, for example, the factories that are... You've got a whole range of factories which have been idle, where the owners have not been running them, they've shut them down and so forth. Those are clearly being taken control of by the government and set up workers' control factories. So you have a whole range of factories. The Heinz factory was a recent one where if... Basically, it's a crime against the nation is the fact that these factories are not producing in a country where there's still, I think, 70% of food has to be imported and so forth. So you've got desperate need for the people just for the basic goods and so forth, and you've got factories that are not being opened. But at the same time, they're not saying, you know, in one foul swoop, today we are going to nationalise, you know, every single company. It has to be a process of workers learning about workers' control, getting more combative, and there is a process of workers taking over more factories, taking more control. There's also restrictions, quite harsh restrictions from a capitalist point of view on what they can do. So, for example, there are laws that have been implemented that they cannot sack workers, lay off workers and so forth. So that's obviously puts, you know, a pretty fundamental right in the eyes of capitalists, takes that away from them. So very much things, as I said, are in favour of working people, but it's also, as I said, I think a very astute revolution where, you know, saying carte blanche that today we're going to nationalise every single corporation factory would possibly be a big danger for the revolution. As it's happening, you know, it's very easy to convince and have the entire or the vast majority of the people behind you when you're taking over the factories that are idle and so forth. You're building up more and more workers' control, and as workers' control shows itself to be a more useful way of running society's resources in the interests of the people, to produce the books that are needed, to produce for the education, to produce for the healthcare and so forth, then more people are going to be won to that, and I think you see further and further workers' control.
Okay, but what about the big enterprise in Venezuela, the oil industry? What's the situation? That's run by the state, but that didn't stop a major rebellion occurring amongst the administration of that corporation. Is that right?
You had a big battle over the oil industry. As you said, the oil is the crucial business in Venezuela. And indeed, it makes up, I think, over half of the economy, essentially. In late 2002, you had the bosses' oil lockout, basically. They basically, what the Venezuelans call...
Well, hang on, you say the bosses' oil lockout. Who are these bosses?
Well, essentially...
If the industry is run by the state, how can they...
Well, it was supposedly run by the state. In effect, it was virtually being run as a private institute, or basically in the interests of a corrupt layer that was within the oil industry. And that was what the government, under Chavez and so forth, was basically trying to do some dramatic reforms, which got the ire of those who were in the cozy positions and have been skimming off millions. So you had an institution that was nominally a state institution, but was essentially being run in the interests of this corrupt layer that were getting millions of dollars and working with the US elite, and it was being organised for privatisation. Chavez started to move against that, which prompted them to basically organise a lockdown of the oil industry, basically sabotage the country, shut down, you know, food distribution, a whole range of things couldn't happen. Well, virtually almost the entire economy, and it was a very desperate circumstance. This happened over, I think, just over 71 days. You know, people were starving and so forth, and a lot of the workers went with the oil bosses because they were fairly well off workers that had been and they were somewhat duped by some of the privileges that they had. And that was a big crisis situation. And Chavez told us a story at the World Youth Festival, which we went to at the end
we'll
of
get to
our
that
brigade.
A little bit later, yeah.
Can I tell you the story?
Oh, yeah, yeah sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can give it to us now, yeah.
Yeah, which was that he went, he said this was one of his lowest points. And you know, he felt, you know, because this was a real sabotage, they call it the fascist coup, that was basically, you know, hurting, you know, millions of people. He went around the communities and he was invited in by this old woman in with her family, and she showed him, she invited him up and said, we're having soup. She showed him, they were cooking the soup on a fire. There was no, you know, there was no oil or electricity and so forth. And she said, that's the bedside cabinet that's being burnt there. Tomorrow it'll be the legs of my bed. The next day it will be the headstand of the bed. This is what we have to do. But then she grabbed Chavez. She grabbed him by the sort of shirt coats and shook him and said, but whatever you do, don't give up. Don't give up. We can't give up now. And that was, you know, that was just one of the stories in the depths of it. Some of the workers, the lower ranks workers, stayed with the oil company. What happened during that period was there was massive sabotage. They tried to pour concrete. This is the old bosses tried to pour concrete down to destroy a lot of the instruments in the oil industry. And in fact, the computer system was run out of the United States, so a flick of the switch in the United States was able to shut down the computer system. But the workers, with the army in support and a whole range of other workers that rallied around, were able to, over time, overturn this sabotage, get the oil industry running again. This was a huge victory for the revolution, and through that, they were able to clean out the oil elite and basically, in effect, renationalize the oil industry, bring it under genuine government control, bring it under the power of the working people. And now, very much, this is the oil industry that now, it's only since that time, which was, that was defeated in early 2003, that's now given the opportunity to really run the social missions.
Ahí mismo es, compadre. Vamos para la batalla de San Luis, compadre. ¿Cómo no, Mario Lico? Yo de primero. Yo de primero nada más va el pescuezo de mi caballo, mi hermano.
Permítanme presentarles, ay, presentarles cómo está la situación. En Venezuela, señores, oigan, señores, hay una revolución. En esta revolución se ha venido unificando pueblo, ejército y gobierno, todo en un solo comando. Todo en un solo comando, hay un comando en patrullas y UVs. En patrullas y UVs estamos organizando la batalla de Santa Inés. En esta misma batalla rescataremos la historia, nos ha dicho el comandante, para la honra y la gloria. Para la honra y la gloria, anda la gloria de todo el pueblo oprimido. De todo el pueblo oprimido que ha vuelto a levantarse, porque es un pueblo guerrido, un pueblo vivo y valiente, levanta su dignidad. Niños, jóvenes y adultos se agrupan en la unidad. Se agrupan en la unidad frente al hambre y la opresión. Frente al hambre y la opresión, presentándose al combate para la liberación. Tenemos la convicción que se alcanza cada día, con esfuerzo y con tesón, mucho amor y alegría.
¡Viva Venezuela!
Mucho amor y alegría, tanta alegría que desborda cada gesto. Desbordante en cada gesto, no existe oposición que responda frente a esto. Con cordura y con respeto, incapaz de resistir a la fuerza de este pueblo que inspira su porvenir. patria su porvenir, su porvenir como un buen bolivariano. Como un gran bolivariano asumamos el legado, levantemos nuestra frente, bien unidos como hermanos de todo este continente. ¡Viva la Constitución para honra de nuestra gente! Para honra de nuestra gente que se quiere liberar y se quiere emancipar, emancipar de cualquier forma de imperio que lo quiera dominar. Con acción y pensamiento nuestro pueblo ha despertado y aquí no comemos cuento. Permítanme presentarles, ay, presentarles cómo está la situación. Así está la situación en Venezuela, señores, hay una revolución. Y aquí nos tomemos cuenta y en el alma una visión, defender al presidente y a esta gran revolución. Chávez no se va.
From within the shadow of the Golden Circle Cannery, you're listening to The Blather with Dave Riley.
How powerful is the old guard, you know, the old Venezuela, still in this new process, Venezuela at the present time? Are they still as powerful as they seem to be back then?
Because no, I think...
There's no more coups happening. But,
no.
Who's winning now, and what seems to be the likely fallout in the time ahead?
The momentum, the sentiment we got was the momentum is very much with the revolutionary process, and that the revolution has consolidated a great deal more than it was in those difficult days.
We're talking about 2 years ago.
In April 2002 was the coup, late 2002, early 2003 the oil lockout. There was the referendum campaign subsequently, all which were defeated by the people and Chavez. So that there's a lot more confidence, and the opposition is very discredited. They're very discredited politically. The old parties, which were the ones that were humiliated when Chavez came into power, they couldn't get, you know, virtually anything in the recent council elections and so forth. So they're very discredited, and the momentum is very much with the revolutionary process. But I guess the other side of that is that the more the certain channels are clearly not available to the right, that is, they don't have any real political avenues where they can challenge because they're just so discredited, and Chavez and the process is more and more popular and people are becoming more and more and more involved, then you can see the possibilities for and the desperation for an alternative way of trying to stop this process will get stronger. Things like assassination.
Okay, that's why they're talking up assassination in the United States. They use radio and television talk jocks to do it for
them. That's right.
Pat, what's your name?
Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson, let's kill Chavez. Okay.
Yes.
Let's go and buy IBM and kill Chavez and do the shopping at the same time.
That's right. But that's taken very seriously. I mean,
they knock off Chavez. Mm. So it's his revolution, is it?
No, it's a very much a relationship. We saw this intimately in so many ways, a relationship between Chavez and the people, with Chavez, as I mentioned before, playing a very key, very important leadership role. His Alo Presidente program is like a introduction to socialism.
Program.
Yeah, every Sunday speaks to the nation. Nothing, you know, no sort of condescension or whatever, but very much a dialogue with the people. How are we going to take the revolution forward? What are the problems? He's very upfront with a whole range of the big problems that exist and problems of bureaucracy. There is enormous problems of bureaucracy. There's opportunists within the process. In fact, the fact that the opposition parties are so discredited means that a lot of the opposition is actually going into the Chavez parties, because that's the way, if you want a position, if you're in it for just cozy positions, you're not going to get cozy positions in the old parties. You try and get a cozy position now in pro-Chavez parties. So there's a lot of difficulties there. Chavez is very awake to those, and he's always urging maximum participation of the people as the biggest defence against any bureaucratic problems and opportunist problems. At the same time, the people are becoming more combative, more political, more involved. This discussion about socialism has really taken off. You can imagine an entire country that's talking about socialism. It's talking about, you know, what alternatives, what kind of socialism in the 21st century, what mistakes have been made before, what can we do differently, how can we you know, build a different society. And they can see that this is part of an international struggle, because the world, you know, Chavez is very clear that the choices facing the world essentially is socialism or barbarism, as Marx has said before, and Luxembourg, and that's a choice that might need to be decided within 50 years, environmentally and so forth. So, but, you know, in all honesty, a revolution without Chavez, with the assassination and so forth, would be under enormous pressure, because Chavez does play an extremely important role in holding it together, and an important leadership role. So some people see it, I guess, as a bit of a race against time to broaden that out, to strengthen the process so that it is not as reliant on Chavez. But at the moment, there is certainly a very critical role that he plays, and that's why the assassination is a real option if you're looking at it from the US imperialist viewpoint.
Nonetheless, there's some on the left who, although enthusiastic about the process in Venezuela, consider that the Chavez is potentially a break on the revolutionary process there. Do you agree with that viewpoint?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know if... I mean, the people that I've... Yeah, reading... You read stuff, some of the smaller left groups and so forth tend to have often a recipe book type viewpoint of how a revolution should happen, and instead of looking at the genuine dynamic as it happens and trying to understand from that and learn from that.
But just a minute, Philip, but the man's Brian a Christian. He's not even signed on as a Marxist, isn't he?
Well, he has, I think he has signed on as a Marxist, but yeah, he's definitely a Christian, and in fact, that's a big strength, I think, that a lot of people see, that he's, you know, he's able to bring a real humanism and to the discussion about socialism and about an alternative. And it's not about being, you know, some sort of pure cater that has to spurn religion or what have you. It's about learning about a new society, how it's going to be constructed. And it's actually through this process that Chavez himself has developed. He said that he did think there was a third way. He now no longer thinks that there's a third way, and that the only way to go beyond capitalism is through socialism. So you can see that process itself has changed Chavez. It's changed the people. The people, that's one of the most exciting things you see, is a people who is growing each day in dignity and in politicization and discussing the ways that they can, you know, that they can change the world. But I mean, Chavez is certainly no break on the process. And you know, we spoke to a whole range of people, student groups, political groups, workers' organisations, the new unions, peasant cooperatives, and so forth. And the clear thing is that people see Chavez as a key leader of the revolution. At the same time, they see enormous problems. But you've got to be clear where the problems lie, and the problems lie with a whole range of the bureaucracy and so forth, and Chavez points to it very clearly, that are not clearly with the revolution, that are not, you know, moving everything in a revolutionary direction, that are sitting back and happy with some of their privileges and so forth. That's where the problem lies. They're the ones to be challenged. But I mean, I think some of these groups shy away from the need for revolutionary leadership, and where that, you know, if Chavez goes bad and moves against the revolution or does something clearly wrong, well then he should be criticised for that. But at every turn, you know, this has been quite an amazing revolutionary process that he's led, defeated three coups, and you know, it's something that should be learnt from. You know, I think the fact that you've got small groups, I mean, we went with a huge amount of humility, and I think that's pretty important to have, and to hear or see left groups critiquing from the sidelines is
another associated problem, I would think. What about exhaustion amongst the people who have been involved up front in this process? I mean, are the achievements there that tangible enough to say for people to say, well, this is worthwhile, we'll keep going?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the process is, if anything, increasing in speed. We talked about how the oil, the defeat of the oil lockout at last opened up the resources to really go forward with the social missions. And it's since then that we've seen enormous gains in terms of thousands of new schools.
Thousands?
Yeah, over 3,000 new schools.
Well, how long? In how short a period?
That's since, that's since 1998, but most of them are since late 2002, early 2003.
So where do the teachers come from?
The teachers come from the new Bolivarian University. They've come from, basically massive increase in the education mission. So you've got Mission Robinson is a literacy mission, and this is basically, I think within the next month, Venezuela should be announced illiteracy free. 1.5 million people out of a population of 25 million will have learnt to read and write, and we saw, you know, some pretty touching scenes of you know, 60-year-olds and so forth writing their name for the first time. So the literacy mission's mission to get people through who didn't have a chance to finish high school, to get their high school diploma and so forth, and to get, there's hundreds of thousands more that have been able to access university. There's the new Bolivarian universities, so that's where a lot of the teachers have come from. You also have Cubans over, in particular Cuban doctors and health professionals that have been helping out in the health system, or more than helping out, 30,000 doctors and healthcare professionals that have been running basically the barrio adentro, which means inside the barrios, inside the poor areas, the healthcare there, because previously pretty much all the Venezuelan doctors were doing plastic surgery in the rich areas rather than looking after desperately sick people, dying people in the poor areas, because that's where the money was. That's the logic of the capitalist system. Venezuela put out the call, the government put out the call for people to come to this new project, new program, doctors. They only got 50 Venezuelan volunteers, so they ended up getting 30,000 from Cuba. In return, Cuba gets cheap oil, which is a huge benefit to a blockaded country like Cuba, getting the cheap oil from Venezuela. It's a huge benefit to both the countries.
Well, that brings up the prospect of the international connections and the international prospects relative to Venezuela, because the situation that must be pressing to anyone involved in the process is what can Uncle Sam do to turn off the gas? What's the likely attitude, and what's your likely approach to the United States in the time ahead? There seems to be a lot of confusion from the Bush administration. It's got a quagmire in Iraq. It doesn't necessarily seem to be wanting to open another interventionist tact in Latin America, but obviously they're not ignoring the process.
No, I mean, Condoleezza Rice has said that Venezuela is the most dangerous country in Latin America, and I mean, we've heard Pat Robertson, but that's just a crude echoing of what the US administration certainly thinks. But you're right, it's a very difficult position and interesting world political position that we see, because the US is stretched in Iraq. It does have, you know, an enormous commitment there, and people would describe that probably as a quagmire and perhaps another Vietnam. Meanwhile, its own backyard, as it sees it, is in a, you know, very difficult situation, and an alternative being developed that it would not like to see. Cuba was bad enough, and we know that Cuba has faced the blockade, you know, chemical warfare, biological warfare, assassination attempts against its leadership and so forth for decades. That was bad enough, and of course Cuba didn't have the oil. Venezuela does have the oil, and a new alliance now being built between Venezuela and Cuba would be looked on as very dangerous. So it will be, it's very interesting to watch, and I think it's pretty important that we develop our solidarity. That's what we want to try and do, build up solidarity here, because the Venezuelans, for example, think that next December, just over a year away, the presidential elections will be held. Chavez will almost certainly, if Chavez is alive, he will win those elections very convincingly, and they're convinced that the US cannot allow that kind of re-legitimizing of Chavez and the revolutionary process, so that they will try and move before then. So we want to build up the solidarity that we can to make it as difficult as possible, and make for any administration to move against this revolution, whether it's supporting forces in Colombia to attack, or they've had warships off the coast of Venezuela.
So there is a possibility of a contra-type situation like happened in Nicaragua. From Colombia,
yes.
Right? And that's the feasibility, and that has a lot to do with the politics of Colombia at the present time too, and the role that the US plays in that area, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the sort of consensus is that you won't have a direct invasion. You can't. I mean, the US really cannot afford a direct invasion. I mean, you see what's happened in Iraq, and that's a country that was decimated by sanctions, and which, you know, where the people had no desire to defend their political regime that they were being ruled over by. Venezuela, you have a very, very different situation. People that are hugely politicized, that are very willing to defend the process. We certainly heard from many, many people that they would be very prepared to die for this revolution. And, of course, it hasn't suffered the blockades and so forth. So a direct invasion would seem to be out for the time being, but certainly something more along the lines of Contras through Colombia would seem to be a possibility.
Okay. The other thing is, let's get back to your time in Venezuela itself. There was you, and there was a few other people from overseas for a particular event, the World Festival of Youth.
World Festival of Youth, yeah.
So let's talk about that angle. What about those overseas looking at Venezuela, and what was the sentiment there, and what's the potential for solidarity and sundry other bits and pieces that can help to support this revolution?
I think we met. There were 20,000 people at the World Youth Festival.
That's 20,000 all up, or 20,000 from overseas, or
20,000 all up.
Okay.
Yeah. There was about. Well, I mean, there were obviously plenty of Venezuelans around, but the sort of official delegation, I think, was about 3,000 from Venezuela. So about 15,000-17,000 from international delegations. And a lot of that from Latin America, but also from all across the globe, from the US, from obviously from Australia, and I think probably about 100 countries. And, I mean, the fact that this was occurring in a country like Venezuela, where there was such social change going on, made it a very special conference. The speeches, some the opening and closing ceremonies, and people heard from Hugo Chavez. I mean, it was quite an inspiring moments where, I mean, he made a very clear case against imperialism and for a socialist future. At the closing ceremony, we had about an over 3 hour long speech, but it was one of those, well, I never thought I'd sit through a speech that long with such interest. And
Even though you can't speak Spanish.
Yeah, well, we had translations through the headphones. Unfortunately, the translators weren't nearly as vibrant as Chavez. You could hear Chavez putting in incredible emotion, and then the translators would be deadpan in their reading out. But still, it was quite an amazing experience. So I think that certainly has built up the possibility for solidarity. And I mean, there was a message that came at that through that closing ceremony that the conference couldn't end there. This conference, against its theme, was against war and imperialism, and the message was the conference doesn't end here, this is the start of it, and we have to go and tell the world that imperialism is not invincible, that it can be defeated. And so that's the sort of message that was to be taken by the delegates from all the countries, the 20,000 delegates there. And obviously Venezuela is a leading country that is defeating imperialism, that is showing an alternative. And I think there is solidarity that's being built up all around the world as a result of the conference and I think there'll be plenty more with every brigade that goes to Venezuela, every event that happens there, such as the World Social Forum meeting that's going to be happening there in January next year.
All right, so people can join these brigades every year now?
They can. Next year, it looks like there'll be three brigades at least from Australia, so that's quite
three separate times.
Yes, there'll be a small brigade in January around the World Social Forum, so if people are interested, go to the World Social Forum in Caracas, and then they can spend about 10 days visiting some of the social missions and examining the process in Venezuela. There'll be another one, particularly for trade unionists, around May Day. The year that we're in, 2005, there was a mighty rally of 1.3 million people on May Day in support of socialism and workers' control. So that would be quite an amazing thing to go to on around May 1. And finally, near the end of the year, around the presidential elections, there'll be a third brigade, and people might even be able to be election observers of the presidential election. They might be able to get official UN observer status to observe the elections, so play a role in that way to make sure they go along all right, but also examine the process, and at a very political time in December next year.
I'm certain that information about those brigades will be available. If anyone wants more information about Venezuela, they can visit the site Venezuela Solidarity and the other site Venezuela Analysis. Mm. And I'll put the URLs for those sites up on the webpage, and you can go directly there. But before we move on to those things, let's have a look at the pamphlet concerned, Venezuela: Diary of a Revolution by Paul Benedict. It's a day by day rundown of your experience there.
More or less, yeah.
It's obviously written with a lot of enthusiasm. I see it's written in the form of letters from afar. Is that right? You know, letters from Venezuela.
That's right.
From the body of the revolution.
I must admit that I didn't know when I was writing these that they would end up as a pamphlet. So that way you get a very sort of uncensored version of very much a day by day. Excited writing back to family and friends and about what we were seeing, the people we were meeting, the processes and everything, and tried to capture the colour and life of what's happening in Venezuela.
Now, I'll put the details for the booklet up on the webpage, and with details where you can get it from, order it from, and where you could probably pick up a copy if you walked into a shop and grabbed it. But I think you make a point of grabbing a copy of this, plus other new books that are coming out on Venezuela. I see it's becoming quite a little cottage industry, books on Venezuela now. Mm. And so that people are really trying to come to grips with this revolutionary process.
Yes.
Anyway, I'd like to thank Paul for coming along here today.
Thanks very much, Dave. And it's been a pleasure.
And sharing his enthusiasm for the process underway in Venezuela. And for further information, just check the webpage.
Es la fuerza y la emoción, canto victorioso lleno de amor. Este pueblo la razón, sueño bolivariano y su pasión, que defiende con devoción los sueños del libertador, que defiende con devoción los sueños del libertador. Todo el pueblo,
¡Bózalo!
Venezuela,
¡Bózalo!
Todo el pueblo,
¡Bózalo!
Venezuela,
¡Bózalo!
Porque toda la nación,
¡Bózalo! No, no, no,
porque toda la nación,
¡Bózalo! No, no, no,
pa' que siga el presidente,
votando,
que sigan las misiones,
votando,
la mujer bolivariana,
votando,
el futuro de la patria,
votando.
Fuerza positiva, credo yo, canto victorioso del amor, misión florentino es un tambor, por el presidente Chávez votando, el pueblo dice no.
Seguro no en todas partes no volverá. La alegría vibra ya, porque somos mayoría, es la verdad. No te olvides, porque Chávez no, no, no se va. No te olvides, porque Chávez no, 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 no se va. Todo el pueblo, Venezuela, todo el pueblo, Venezuela, porque toda la nación,
no, no, no,
porque toda la nación,
no, no, no.